When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is the Michael K. Show podcast. Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.
This is Stephen A. from Hollis, Queens, and the Michael K. Show starts now. Holla at your boy, Michael, Don Juan, and Peter.
And a good afternoon, everybody. This is indeed the Michael K. Show. We thank you for joining us on this Tuesday. It is January 18th, 2022. Michael K., Don LaGreca, Peter Rosenberg. We're apart, but we're together for the next 4 hours. The other 20, that's your responsibility. And we start off with last night's final Super Wild Card weekend game. And it was a little bit of a letdown, to tell you the truth. It did not live up to what I thought it was going to live up to.
It was something.
And I tell you what, at times during that game, Kyler Murray had to be thinking about playing baseball. Had to. I mean, he was just awful. He looked scared. He looked tentative. He had no chance whatsoever. I know the Rams have a good front and a good rush and everything, but my goodness, he looked absolutely lost.
I was wondering, I was like, you know, scared of being shouted down by the Twitter mob, or I would have tweeted this, but I wonder if you think about benching him. And I know that's a crazy thought, you know, but, like, he did not appear, guys, to give them a chance to compete yesterday.
No.
He looked completely overwhelmed by the moment to the point that they were never in the game. It was a dreadful, unenjoyable, in every way, football game.
The pick six was an embarrassment.
It totally.
I mean, you just take the 2 points there. At that point, just take the 2 points. If you're trying to throw it away, throw it away. He just threw it up there where there was a good chance there would be a defender. It was awful.
We've seen that happen late in games, right? Because it's not just about the 2 points. It's the loss of possession. But at that time of the game, you know, you're right. Take the safety. You're not going to win the game anyway. But at that stage of the game, what would have been – you know, 16-0 as opposed to 21-0.
Huge. That's a huge difference.
That's a big deal. But you know what I'm saying, Peter. If it's late in the game and you just can't afford to give up the ball, well, then you just try to make something happen. But at that stage of the game, it was too early to think.
I think Joe Judge called up Kingsbury after the game and said, you know, you should have done two quarterback sneaks right there.
Yeah. We know the play there.
Yeah.
And I don't know. But as I think about it, you guys telling me, like, they're one of the teams that has a backup that can come in and play professional football. Colt McCoy is a professional quarterback. I wonder if they would have been better off at halftime saying, we don't have a chance, we're bringing out Colt McCoy. This guy, and it's not that I'm saying, and I know it's hard to get up from that, so I guess that's the reason not to do it, is that you worry that if you do that, you're permanently damaging Kyler Murray's psyche and the way the fan base sees him. But, Don, if you were a fan last night of the Cardinals, and last night you were because you picked them,
yeah,
would you have felt better about their chances if they said, we're just going to put in our backup because this kid's not giving us a chance?
But there's a lot of things at play here. You know, we're talking about a quarterback that is your future. I mean, look at what they did to acquire him. I mean, they completely pivoted on their first-round pick at a quarterback when they changed Kingsbury and they drafted Murray. I mean,
and they fired their coach.
It was all for this kid. He's in his third year. So you ask yourself this question, Peter, wide lens view of it, is that we're not winning this game. I could bring in Colt McCoy. We might be able to find a way to be competitive. But you know what? If it is the yips, if it is nerves, I want my franchise quarterback to play four quarters in a postseason game. I want him to learn. I want him to get this experience. We think we're going to be good next year. Do I want to do that kind of damage psychologically to my franchise quarterback. That's the only thing, because I'm with you. You're trying to win a playoff game. You never know what's going to happen.
Yeah, but the other thing to consider, too, is the reason the guy was so bad is he didn't have time to breathe. And the best part of his game is maneuverability and his ability to run. Colt McCoy doesn't have that. Colt McCoy would be a sitting duck. Right. I don't think they could have brought anybody in at that point. The Rams were ravenous defensively.
Oh, they were very good.
But the other side of the coin with this, guys, is the Rams have been kind of an enigma, not just this year, but in recent years, where this team probably could have been better than they've been. They've been to a Super Bowl, but I remember it's like Steve Young talking up the Rams like they're their worst enemy is themselves. Like they could beat anybody, they just end up beating themselves. And then Stafford comes in, and again, 0-3 in the postseason, hasn't beat a winning team. They come out of this game looking like a legit contender in this conference if Stafford's going to play the way he played last night.
And he didn't even have to be great, though, right, Don. I mean, with Akers being that good, you don't have to be that great.
But that throw to Beckham was good. I mean, he had some nice throws. Listen, he's got some weapons. He's had weapons all year. But if he gets rid of that whole moniker of he can't win the big game, he can't win the playoffs, can't beat winning teams, and goes out there and beats a team that was 8-1 on the road. You know, let's not forget, we can make the Cardinals out to be the Sweet Sisters of the Poor. They were 10-2 earlier this season. They looked like, in the first half of the year, the best team in football. So that's a legit playoff team. They didn't beat the Eagles or the Steelers last night. They beat a team that belongs in the postseason, and they beat them up and down the floor. Defensively, which we never really had any questions about with the Rams, but now if this is the quarterback play you're going to get and this is the offense you're going to get, don't you feel a lot better about them now than you did 24 hours ago?
Yeah, you do. You do. I mean, they've got everything they need in order to win. And, you know, they've sold their future for this too. I mean, getting Wilson – obviously making the trade for Stafford. I think bringing in OBJ was a stroke of genius because everybody's going to double Cooper Kupp. Now, even if OBJ is not what he was with the Giants, he's still a very good receiver. So you've got a very good receiver that's always going to be single covered because you've got to double cover Cooper Kupp. I mean, what a weapon. I mean, what a landing spot for this guy. Talked his way out of Cleveland. What a landing spot. I mean, he's going to end up He might end up with a Super Bowl ring from this. And he's not going to just be a passenger. Because, again, if you take away Cooper Kupp, you can't take away OBJ. And OBJ in some offenses would be the number one option. Here he's the number two option. Pretty good.
No, that's a good football team that, again, if they don't beat themselves. And you're right, it wasn't the greatest performance by a quarterback. He only threw 17 times. But I thought he was effective. They utilized the weapons that they had. You know what they can be defensively. Von Miller gets his first sack in God knows how long.
Man, he looked sharp last night, though.
Amazing. Here is Keyshawn Johnson on his show today. You can hear from 8 to 10 right here on 98.7 ESPN. Why Odell didn't work in Cleveland.
When you're on a bad team, man, it's there is no antidote for your brain. When you got to walk in that locker room and look at some of your teammates, when you know that you're pouring out your heart every single week to do the job, it's just when you're on a bad team, that's just what it is. When you're on a good team, everything is going the way that it's supposed to go. You touch the football a handful of times, but every time you touch it, it turns into something positive and you win the football game.
Now, the one thing that I would disagree with Keyshawn about.
I'm with you.
Browns aren't a bad team.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's not like he was on the Giants or the Jets. Browns were a contending team.
He just didn't like
the quarterback.
Right. Things kind of melted down. He might have been somewhat responsible for that meltdown. Certainly the quarterback was as well. But let's not make the Cleveland Browns out to be the Jacksonville Jaguars. They were a playoff team last year. We expect them to be a playoff team this year. They were not a bad team. No. They might have ended up being bad at the end of the year when Mayfield's missing games because of COVID and OBJ's gone.
But it is. I agree with you. That team could have been good, particularly if things had worked out between Baker and Odell. But it is wild that he's the same dude. Season's basically split in half, and did not have a touchdown with Cleveland. And last night recorded his fifth with the Rams.
And threw a 40-yard bomb. Amazing. He's on a great team. And I'm sure you elevate your game when you're on a great team because you want to match Cooper Kupp, who's, you know, some people say in the MVP running. It's very rare for a wide receiver to get that much love, but he's been that great.
I got to tell you, though, I know there are Giants fans who will disagree because they're still bitter about Odell. Obviously, I'm not a Giants fan, so I was happy for him, though, last night. I was excited to get to see him, you know, someone whose career started so brightly, even though, you know, as much as, because we've always said this, guys, that he could certainly be annoying. He's never appeared to be a bad guy, right?
No.
He can be a malcontent and sort of a pain in the you-know-what and has the antics, the proposing to the net and the complaining, etc. But he was never proven. He never seemed to be a bad guy. I was really happy to see him have a moment in the playoffs that mattered last night.
Tell me if this is fair about Odell. He's not a bad guy, but he's the last one you want on your team if there's any kind of soap opera, any kind of issues.
Oh, yeah.
I don't think he's going to be there to help you through the tough times, okay? He's a front runner, and when I say front runner, I mean it that when everything's going well and you're on a good team, yeah, he'll keep his mouth shut. He'll do what he has to do to win games. But if they face adversity, if they start losing a few, that's probably not the guy that's going to bind everybody together and get you through.
You know, that was his first playoff appearance since the game after the boat trip.
Yep. Yeah.
And he was awful in that game. Awful. Remember, yeah, he punched a wall in the outside the Green Bay locker room.
He dropped two or three passes
from Eli Manning. So he was terrible. So he's had to sit on that playoff performance until yesterday.
But that was a heck of a catch for the touchdown. He was stay in bounds, keep the ball.
Watching Odell's entire career, that is exactly the play you would describe him as being best at, right, Don?
Yeah.
Just using his hands, his sheer hand strength to go up and grab the ball plus tap his toes. He is a dude who can give you that. And it is interesting that him and Baker weren't able to link up on anything like that in the red zone. Wouldn't you think that if you had Odell Beckham on your team anytime you're inside the 10, that's a play you're considering? Because he's very tough. He can go up and get the ball and has incredible hands. It is weird that they just had zero chemistry in Cleveland.
It is strange. It is strange, but, you know, how much of it was his fault? How much of it was Baker Mayfield's fault? You know, he was in a situation that was supposedly perfect for him. He's with his buddy from college, Jarvis Landry. They certainly had weapons with Chubb, but it didn't work out there.
Yeah.
But it's working out in L.A.
Because we could say, listen, he's able to do what he did last night because they've got to worry about Kupp. Well, they had to worry about Landry in Cleveland. They had to worry about a really legit running game. I will not – dysfunctional, yes. Disappointing, yes. Cleveland Browns are not a bad team.
You know, no. I was watching the game. No, it was just before the game, and my son was upstairs playing Madden, and he comes running down.
Charlie, he is becoming such a sports guy. It's like it's happening in front of our very eyes.
He comes running down and goes, "Dad, on Cleveland, there's a guy." I said, "Yeah." He goes, "His name is Chubb." I said, "Yeah." He goes, "Chubb, that's really his name." I said, "Yes, it is."
Like son.
Yeah, he's got my sense of humor.
Why did he find that so funny?
I don't know.
Really, at that stage.
I don't think that he thought the reason I would find it funny is not why he found it funny, but he just thought it was a funny name. But I just thought it was cute.
No, it's cute.
He is as we speak, it seems like every day he's more into sports.
Oh, and he was screaming. We let him stay up till halftime. Scream, because he's a big Cardinal fan. He likes Kyler Murray. He always plays him in Madden. And he just was screaming. I said, "You got to go to bed." And so then I left him a note by his bed so when he woke up, he could see who won. And he was even more disappointed when he saw that. But, yeah, he's really getting into it. So let's take a broad view of the Super Wild Card weekend. Overall, games weren't great. The Cincinnati game was exciting. And I think that was more because Cincinnati didn't succeed in getting that third down because Vegas would have never had that chance to even come back. But every other game was kind of flat. And yesterday we said it was fun. I'll tell you what, when you bet the games, they're kind of more fun than they are if you were just watching this weekend with nothing invested. Did you really get anything out of it? No. So let's look what you got out of it. You got out of it that Tom Brady's phenomenal, which we already knew.
Yeah, knew that.
Ben Roethlisberger was past his expiration date.
We knew that.
Kansas City looks really, really good. Mm-hmm. Who else? Joe Burrow is a stud.
The Cowboys stink.
Cowboys don't know how to be coached. 49ers do know how to be coached. The 49ers and the Packers, that's a game that really intrigues me.
Let me tell you right now. That is Christie Brinkley at the pool with Chevy Chase in Vacation Hop that game. I mean, that is just smoke show. 8 o'clock Saturday night, two of the most classic franchises in football history. Also, I think a pretty evenly matched game. No, that's dead sexy.
Again, I'm looking at the early lines. I don't.
There we go.
Our friend with numbers with a Z has come up with the magic number is 10 for me to clinch and 10 for Peter to clinch last place. So that 10 points either way.
What do you mean?
10. That's the magic number for me to win.
But that can't be the magic number for me to get last place.
Yeah, it's he said that's your tragic number.
So then it would be for Don, so 10 for Don too, I'm guessing.
It said, with the loss by LaGreca last night, 14 points left, the magic number for Kay to clinch the top spot outright, and coincidentally also the tragic number for Rosenberg to get out of last is 10.
Oh, for me to get out of last.
Yeah.
So I can get out, I can get ahead of Don if I can get 10 points.
But if That's Don tough. Gets all of his points, that doesn't no. make sense. How could you have a magic number?
Because I can't.
You can't.
You don't have a magic. You have a tragic. What's my
I
magic?
Guess I could have a magic number. If I get 10 more points, I get can't be caught, even right. by
and,
Don.
And I guess, right. and then there's a magic number for me to where Peter can't catch me.
Right. But he didn't say that one. Right now, this is the way we stand. I'm 32-25 with 65 points. Don's 28-28-1 with 60.5. He's 4.5 behind. And Peter's 30-26-1 with 56 points. So he's 9 behind me. And he is 5.5 behind Don.
And the thing is, how are we going to
be? No, I'm sorry. 4.5, Peter. 4.5 behind Don.
We're not going to be that different on our picks.
That's the kill. That's going to be the killer. But this is all – you can have that fun with numbers if we're all going to pick differently. But when we get down to so few, there's only four games to pick. So we're going to be doubling up. We have to pick three games. And so we're going to have the same game, and there's a likely chance that at least one of those will be the same pick. So you really don't have the available points you think.
Right, and the one thing that you do not want to do if you're chasing me is have the same three-point pick as me, because then you're taking away your real chance to get the ground.
And now that we have to submit our picks before we make them on the air, you can't avoid that. If it's going to happen, it's going to happen. So keep your ears open, Peter. Michael will drop little hints. You got to try to pick up on them and then act accordingly.
And then just go the other way.
Now, I don't have to submit my picks early because I'll pick first. You guys have to submit your picks early.
That's a good point. I think everyone should. True. But
I mean, everybody should just do the right thing.
Well, one thing that Peter should do is just
not
you know, beg out of the Tannenbaum interview. I got to walk bare.
I'm just ignoring. I'm ignoring. No words Tannenbaum says matter. But you tell me, how can anyone pick comfortably the Chiefs-Bills game?
You can't. It's a crapshoot.
What's
it really
number?
Is.
It's -2 for Kansas City. Now, my initial gut is still Kansas City over the Bills, but the Bills are playing really good football. I mean, they literally just played a perfect game.
But when the Bills beat the Chiefs earlier in the year, the Chiefs' defense was terrible. Now their defense is one of the best defenses in football. They've gotten it right.
Yep.
And also, Patrick Mahomes wasn't playing the same then as he is now.
No.
Yeah, that team figured it out.
They have figured it out. We had on Orlovsky and Steve Young. They thought that they could be in serious trouble for the season.
Are they
going to make the playoffs? Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
So they've turned things around. So you can't look at what they've done this season because it's completely different. So who's playing Tampa Bay now?
The Rams.
Rams, right?
Yep.
That's another sexy game.
Very. It's hot.
I almost wanted to text Brownshire yesterday, the Schnurrer from our station. Who do the people in St. Louis hate more? Do they hate the Cardinals more or do they hate the Rams more? They're two wives that left them.
Yeah, but they left St. Louis in 87. It's a long time ago. So the wounds are still way more fresh for the Rams. So it depends on the generation you're talking to.
Yeah, but you can't really be that mad at the Rams. The Rams left somebody to marry you, and then they left you to remarry that same person.
Well, Brouncher says he hates the Rams considerably more.
Really? He just texted you that?
I was given that information.
Interesting.
And there was never really anything that the Cardinals gave the city of St. Louis. An occasional playoff, you know, round. Never made a run at a championship. The Rams won a championship in St. Louis. Went to back-to-back Super Bowls in St. Louis. What did the Cardinals give you while they were there?
They gave you Jim Hart.
That's right. Not much else. Early career O.J. Anderson.
Right.
And who was the wide receiver, Green? Why is his first name escaping me? Yeah, Roy Green.
Now, the Giants are doing their second round of interviews.
Yes.
They did 9 virtually. So the second round in person, and I believe the guy from Buffalo, Shane, it's spelled S-C-H-O-E-N, but it's pronounced Shane, he was being interviewed as recently as like 1 o'clock, so he might still be in there. And a lot of people seem like they like him. Now, you get him, does that mean that Dable comes as like a package deal? Something to consider. Other team, you know, it seems like Brian Flores is waiting around for them. Here's an interesting thing. A lot of people were batting this around over the weekend. It seems as if Flores is a package deal with the quarterback from Houston. He wants to play with Flores as the head coach.
Watson you're talking about.
Yeah, Deshaun Watson. If you're the Giants, do you even want to go into that water?
Well, you'd have to really do your due diligence and make sure that there's nothing.
Well, there's something.
Well, I mean, nothing. Well, let me finish. Nothing that will stop him from playing.
Oh, okay. Forget about that, though, Don. There's a lot of mess there.
No, it's a mess, but let's be
honest. What happened with Josh Brown? Mara still feels the sting of that.
No, he feels the sting of it, but let's be honest. We were talking about, you know, defending a place kicker. Because what kind of backlash, let's be honest, all right? Because let's not hold anybody to any higher standard than winning. Is that fair?
But the Giants kind of put themselves above that.
Right. They like to, but at the end of the day, you need a quarterback. He's a quarterback that'd help you win. If the Giants are winning, is there going to be a backlash? Are people going to be burning their tickets in the parking lot? Are they going to cancel their season tickets? Are they going to flip out?
Are they going to
be happy that their team's winning a bunch of games?
Well, now, after he's playing, but I'm saying once you get him, there's going to be a backlash.
Again, right now there would be.
Right.
But by the time we get to it and we find out he's eligible to play, don't you think most fans, I'm not saying they'd be right, but wouldn't most fans want the Giants to get him if he was not going to be suspended?
Well, here's the way I always look at it. I never had a problem with the Eagles signing Michael Vick. Ever. Did I like what he did? No, what he did was an abomination. But he paid his price. He spent 2 years in Leavenworth, a real prison. Mm-hmm. So when you get out and you do your time, you're allowed to live your life and get another chance. Deshaun Watson hasn't been punished at all. Now, is he supposed to be punished?
Well,
there's 22 separate lawsuits against him. I don't know. Are they filing charges against him? I'm not sure. So he hasn't paid any kind of price for his alleged indiscretions. That's what's going to stand in the way. Again, I had no problem with Michael Vick signing with the Eagles. We were on then. I said, what do you want the guy to do, never work again? But this guy, it's very nebulous. Well, supposedly, there have been like some GMs that said, the only way I'm acquiring is if you settle every single one of these lawsuits. And supposedly 18 of the women were ready to settle with him. The other 4 weren't. So that kind of holds it up.
But at this particular moment, you don't do it because you don't know how it's going to turn out. But you have to wait. And if he becomes eligible to play, whether it's all worked out, whatever time he serves, and let's say the NFL decides to suspend him the first 6 games of the season.
Right.
Then you decide whether it's worth it from a playing standpoint. Once he becomes eligible to play, Michael, if you want to play Mother Teresa, go ahead. But everybody else in the NFL is not. So you've got to compete. So it's easy to sit there and say, well, I'm sorry. We've got the moral high ground. We can't bring this guy in. We're not going to do that. Okay. Then he becomes eligible to play. Your competition gets him. Then how is your fan base going to – it's going to then turn on you. How can you get the, how can you not get this guy?
So, and the Eagles were sniffing around, so the Eagles are interested.
Right. So let's just say that plays itself out, right? You decide to take the moral high ground. You don't want him on your team. Okay, fine. You understand it. I get it. I couldn't kill them for that decision because we don't know what's going to happen. But he becomes eligible to play and becomes a Philadelphia Eagle, and the Eagles are winning division titles and championships, and the Giants are stuck at 6-11. How will the fan base react? You know the fan base will react and flip out and say, how did you not get this guy? So you got to. So when you start talking about how are the fans going to react, Michael, that's what makes it difficult. Because in one stage, they'll react negatively. How did you go out and pick up this guy that is such an evil person? But then once he starts to play and once he starts to win, those same fans will be like, why didn't you pick him up? So you got to do what you think is right for you. And I think the right thing is to wait and see how this all plays out. I don't think you roll the dice.
All right, there's a lot on the plate to talk about. The wild card weekend, what's coming up this weekend, four more big games, and obviously the Giants situation where they have narrowed down their GM search. It could be done by Friday, and then they've got to get to the matter of picking a coach in a hurry because there's a lot of teams out there interviewing coaches that don't need GMs, and that puts the Giants a little bit behind the eight ball. 1-800-919-3776. A lot of stuff to do. A little bit of a surprise coming up right after the break, so stay tuned for that. It's Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you. We're on Yes and on 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael Kay Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. The Michael Kay Show.
Can I work pain to my advantage on occasion? Absolutely. I care about the show to the point, but let's be honest. When I lose, it's more entertaining.
You
but
love
I don't
want
to be hit. But this is David Cohn. David Cohn probably could still throw an 80-mile-per-hour fastball.
But you love pain. You're the Gimp in Pulp
Fiction. Yeah, I was going to go Pulp Fiction.
Listen, we don't really know the backstory to the Gimp, okay? We have no idea what's going on there.
The Michael Kay Show.
We don't know a lot about the Gimp.
On 98.7 ESPN.
All right, so Don says he's got some intriguing takes on Keith Hernandez. I don't know if it's a retirement of number 17, but when Don wants to let loose, you let him let loose. So,
well,
Don, what's on your mind?
I believe that if you're going to retire Keith Hernandez's number, then 16, 18, and 8 all have to go as well.
Okay, so as
they all have
not a Met fan, I would agree with you on 8. That's Gary Carter. But when you say 16 and 18, there are other things to be concerned about there.
Like?
I mean, they kind of like, I mean, Doc would tell you this and Darryl would, they drugged themselves off the team.
No, I get that. But while they were on the team, they were significant to the last championship this franchise ever had. I mean, Keith had his issues too before he came to.
But
the
not
Mets
with the Mets.
Got him.
Not with the Mets, though.
But the Mets got, see, this is why we're whack when it comes to stuff in sports. And punishments, and when it's okay to have the moral high ground, and when it's not. Like we always talk about that the person that commits the crime does it on your team. You have to let him go, and then everybody else can play Mother Teresa and pick him up, and then it's okay.
Mm-hmm.
Like I never understood that. Like if the Mets, you know, keep the bad player, they're bad. But the second they release him, the other 29 teams can all sign him, and nobody's gonna complain. It's not right. And again, Keith's a great guy, but the Mets got him because of his indiscretions when he was in St. Louis in that whole trial in Pittsburgh.
That's probably right? Why he was available. Yeah.
And that's why he was available, and that's why the Mets got him.
Now, I like where you're going, Don.
Doc and Darryl had their issues, all right? And they had their issues because they happened to be Mets at the time. And one has gotten up from it, and it's turned it into a complete positive in his life. And, you know, and Doc is still going through his struggles, but he still was a great pitcher for this team. And again, the struggles that both of them had largely, not all, but largely had to do with substance abuse, which we look at much differently now than we did back in 86.
Mm-hmm.
All right, where it's looked upon more as a disease and maybe an issue that wasn't necessarily all on them. But back in 86, they were bad guys. All right. And all right, Carter, you say, okay, because he was a choir boy, but he's in the Hall of Fame for a lot of what he did in Montreal.
But he was one of the last pieces to the puzzle.
I understood. And Keith was the first piece.
Right.
You know, so when I look at why Keith Hernandez's number is being retired is because of what he meant to that 86 team. So if you're gonna put it largely on that, then how do you ignore Gooden and Strawberry and Carter? I hope this now leads to eventually all four of those numbers being retired.
Do you believe that Gooden and Strawberry winning championships across town hurts them?
No.
Well, it shouldn't.
I don't know why it should. I mean, does it bother me? Of course. Everything bothered me with the exits of both of those players. It kills me that Straw basically was like orchestrating his way out to go to L.A. in 88 when the Mets were in the playoffs. Like, so it bothered me the way Darryl left to go to Los Angeles, and it kills me what happened with Doc. But that doesn't take away the significance of what they meant to that franchise. I mean, listen, they've had their issues, but we retire numbers, yeah, partially because they're good people, but also because of the kind of players they were. And I would still say Doc's a good guy. Darryl is a good
both
guy.
They're both good guys. They're really decent guys.
Yeah, and I think you should celebrate Strawberry. What he meant to the franchise and what he's done
this,
with his life after.
Did Gooden have enough great years to have his number retired? Because the years he had that were great, they were, you know, all-time great. But take a look over the long stretch. Did he really?
I don't know. I don't – see, here's the thing with the retired numbers. It's not the Hall of Fame. It's what Met fans feel about that individual, all right?
Well, then Wally Backman's going to get a number retired.
Oh,
then.
Come on. Well, Wally Backman wasn't the player.
Mookie Wilson.
Doc Gooden walked in 84 and won the Rookie of the Year. And then he wins the Cy Young Award in 85. And then he's a major contributor to a World Series in 86. Those are three of the best years anybody's ever had as a Met. And what he still means to the franchise, you know, thinking about him, how he resonates with this franchise, that's all part of it. Now, you can make the case, well, he shouldn't go to the Hall of Fame and all that, but when we talk about the importance of a franchise, you're telling me Doc Gooden isn't all about the Mets, isn't really the significance of what he meant, even in a small period of time. And then Darryl Strawberry drafted, everything changed when he came up. And Carter was that final piece in 85. I mean, I just look as a Met fan and I look at those four individuals, to me, they're intertwined. Now, if you want to make the case, I'm sorry, just they're not good enough to have their number retired because they're not Tom Seaver or they're not Jerry Kuzman or they're not Mike Piazza. All right. But Keith Hernandez largely will have his number retired because of 86. How do you not then include the other three?
Well, I think Carter's going to be next. I know the Wilpons always had a problem with Doc and Darryl, so they wouldn't have gotten their number retired with the Wilpons owning. Maybe Cohen's different.
Hey, but I'm just talking as a Met fan, okay? Completely biased. But why do you retire numbers? Why do you celebrate players? You do it for the fans, as much as for the player, but you do it for the fans because the fans demand it, the fans want it, the fans need that to happen. And I'd be really surprised if there was a Met fan who didn't think that those four numbers shouldn't be retired.
I'm with Don 1,000%. When you think about the level that they played at on that team and how responsible they both were for that team doing what it did. I mean, Don, isn't it? It's an argument. The best player on that team is an argument you could constantly go back and forth on. And any of those guys in the conversation.
And just the fact, Peter, that 35 years later, they do a documentary, a 30 for 30 on it, just shows you how relevant that team was to this city and to the history of that franchise.
Oh, and they, I mean, not to mention like the boundaries that they cross culturally, you know, like everyone knows Darryl and Doc. Even if you're not a big baseball person, everyone knew Darryl and Doc. So, like, there's a certain element of this that I think sometimes we get caught up in the wonkiness of deservedness being based on numbers. Isn't the main point of doing things stuff like this a marketing tool? Isn't that the main? You want to honor great players who have a legacy. But you also want to have a thing, you want to sell merch around it, you want to celebrate them constantly, and have something to make fans feel good about. What fan in the Met fan base would not feel good about retiring 18 and 16?
Now, I have a question for you, Don. A little trivia question. okay?
Yeah.
When Keith Hernandez left to go to the Cleveland Indians, so now the Guardians, but they were the Indians then.
Right.
Who's the next Met to wear number 17?
Oh, geez. I thought you were going to ask me who replaced him at first. That was easy. That was Dave Magadan. I don't remember.
Friend of the show.
A friend of the show?
Mm-hmm.
God, with baseball numbers, it just doesn't resonate as much. To think who wore 17 after. A friend of the show?
Mm-hmm. Mentioned earlier in the show.
So it was either Cone or Leiter? Right? Those are the two that were mentioned earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, right?
And Darling.
And Darling. But Darling didn't wear 17, obviously.
It was Cone. Because Cone really liked Hernandez. They were very close, so he took 17. And so many people have worn 17. It's funny, like, Paul O'Neill's 21 is not retired. One person has worn it since Paul retired after 2000 or 2001. One person. And he had it for a couple of weeks. So I'm not doing this because the fans booed.
Right. So
LaTroy Hawkins. That
so
was it.
Then it should be retired.
That's always been a curious case for me. I mean, the Yankees decide what numbers they want to retire, but they gave Paul a plaque, and they have retired, like, Jorge Posada, who is not a Hall of Famer,
right?
They've retired Bernie, who is not a Hall of Famer, and Paul was there for all those four championships. I've always wondered why draw that line of delineation right there, because in effect, Don, it's retired. They don't give it to anybody.
See, that maybe it's silly.
And also, the guy's probably more famous now as a broadcaster than he was as a player.
It seems silly to me, Michael, but I think that should be the rule, that if you're not going to give it to anybody and nobody wants to wear it and the fans going to boo if somebody wears it, then retire it. The fans are begging you to do it. Now, I understand you don't want to give him a monument, all right? But the
and well, he has a plaque.
But he has a plaque, but he doesn't have a monument.
You don't get a monument until you're dead.
Right, but
you
I don't think you're going to get one. I don't think he'll get a monument after he passes away.
No.
But I think Peter gets what I'm saying is that it's almost something to where if you're not a fan of the team, it's almost like you really shouldn't have a negative say. The fans should dictate it. If the fans want to give it to them. Now, the Yankees are interesting because you will one day run out of numbers because they have so many retired numbers. You have to draw the line someplace, but I don't think we're close to that yet with the Yankees. And if nobody's wearing 21 and nobody wants to wear 21, then what's stopping it from happening?
I don't get it. Again, I don't get too deep into the weeds on this because there's decisions that are made behind closed doors. I'm not privy to,
but why
O'Neill, who was beloved by the owner of the team, beloved by him.
If there is somebody that goes beyond the numbers, it's Paul. Because you didn't love him because of the numbers. You loved what he was about.
And his numbers are pretty damn good.
Right.
I mean, he won a batting title.
You're not celebrating a Hall of Fame player. You're just celebrating what he represented. He was the Warrior. So he represented something. Like Ken Danico's numbers retired by the Devils, right? Now, Ken Danico's not going to the Hall of Fame. He was a really solid defenseman. He spent 20 years there. The fans loved him. And so they retired his number. It makes sense. Does that mean he's as good a player as Scott Stevens or Scott Niedermeyer? Not even close.
Right.
But what he meant to the franchise, his number belongs in the rafters. It's just something you sense as a fan. And as a Met fan, it will be odd to me to see 17 on that wall and 8, 16, and 18 not be there.
Well, I mean, you do have to get, as you said, it's a marketing tool, too. So you don't want to do them all at once. You do it one at a time, and you make a day of it.
I think we've
got to give Cohen time, but I think he's righting a lot of wrongs.
I think it'll happen. And you know what? And you're doing it in the right order. Right, because of the four, I think Keith deserves to be first. Even though he's not in the Hall of Fame and Gary is, a lot of what Gary did in Montreal got him into the Hall of Fame. So, I believe,
and also he's become an iconic broadcaster for them.
Yeah. That's
a big part of it, man. He's part of the like firmament of the Mets. Now, speaking of David Cone,
yes.
So he's got a podcast with the John Boy Corporation, and he does it with James Smythe and Justin Shackle. It's really good. They get good guests, right? So the guest on the most recent podcast was Greg Maddux. And Greg Maddux told a story I had never heard before. And I hate to say, I don't think it's true. He said that when he was a free agent in 92, He didn't come to New York to be recruited. He said, it wasn't like I was going to a college. I came here with the intent to sign a contract. They showed me around. They showed me houses, went to Broadway show. I remember Gene Michael took him to Miss Saigon, whatever the case may be. And then they said that they, according to Maddox, they couldn't make an offer right now because one of the bigwigs in the organization had had a heart attack. Now, I looked it up. Joe Malloy was the president of the team at that point. That was George Steinbrenner's son-in-law. This is when George was under suspension, right?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't have a heart attack. Len Kleiman and Robert Niederlander, at separate times during the suspension, were the CEOs or the acting general partner of the team, whatever they refer to it, right? And they didn't have heart attacks. Then Maddox said that he was flying to Vegas, was where he lived. He had a stopover in Chicago. There's no cell phones then. He called up Scott Boras. He said, the Yankees did make me an offer. And Boras says, I think we can get something from the Braves. And Maddox said, I love the Braves. And I told him, all right, you go do your Boras stuff. And when I land in Vegas, I hope we have a deal. He landed in Vegas. The Braves are giving him the deal. But I had heard that the Yankees didn't want to be used as like a stalking horse to drive the Braves price up. And the fact that somebody had a heart attack, which is what Greg Maddox said in the pot, I looked it up. It's nowhere. I was the radio broadcaster this time. I think I would have known if the acting general partner of the team had a heart attack. And really, the Yankees pivoted immediately after Maddox signed with the Braves, and they signed Jimmy Key. So did the guy get over the heart attack in a day?
That's weird.
Had you ever heard that story, Don? You've been in New York sports forever.
No,
I never heard the Yankees didn't make an offer because somebody had a heart attack.
Never heard that. I know they were interested in him. They were interested in a lot of players during that period of time. Got turned down by quite a few. Barry Bonds, Ken Griffey Jr., and then, of course, Greg Maddox. But I never heard there was some heart attack.
No. No. Makes no sense. And I mean, if you read all the stories, right, he's either misremembering or he's just not telling the truth. I think that what they did, and this is what the Yankees thought, too, that's why they did not make it. They told Greg Maddox, we want you here. But they did not want to play into the Boras playbook. Let's get an offer from the Yankees and then bring it to the Braves, and that'll up the Braves' offer. The Yankees never made an offer because they wanted to know that he was fully in. So now he goes on this podcast with David and said that a Yankee executive had a heart attack. That's why they never made an offer. He wanted to play for the Yankees. I don't think it's true. I can't say the guy's lying. Maybe he's misremembering, but that was a pivotal point in his life, right? How could he misremember that? Just a little odd. Just a little odd. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know why. I guess the Yankees could have lied and said that it was something, so they didn't, you know, not giving him an offer gave an excuse why they didn't give an offer, so they didn't offend him. Is that possible?
No, I don't know. You know who was there? And maybe I'll check it out with him at some point. Brian Cashman was there. He was kind of an intern, but he was there.
I mean,
he's got to know the story. There's no way. I've never heard anybody that had a heart attack that was in the Yankee front office.
But could somebody in the front office maybe have a father or a brother that had a heart attack and so he wasn't completely engaged because he had to go be with a family member, and that's what he's misremembering?
Knowing how Gene Michael would dot his I's and cross his T's, they knew exactly what they're going to offer the guy. They just wanted to make sure that he wanted to play for the Yankees and not use that offer to go to the Braves. Just odd. So I saw that in the podcast, and I said, I got to check this out.
That is crazy.
Yeah, crazy story. Wow. Imagine how – I mean, Jimmy Key was great for the Yankees, but you look at what Greg Maddox did with the Atlanta Braves.
Take a look at those 90s numbers. He's as good as any pitcher ever was, period.
And really couldn't break a pane of glass. He was a professor on the mound. He looked like a professor on the mound. He didn't throw hard. He said when you know, times got tough, he actually took a little off. Might have taken a little off the truth here. 1-800-919-3776. We told you about the Super Box Bonanza, right? Well, get ready. Get a chance to pick your box. That's coming up in just a moment, so stay tuned for that. It's Kay LaGreca, Rosenberg, and you right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, so some baseball Hall of Fame voters are making their votes public before the ultimate decision is made. And there's a guy on Twitter, I think it's Ryan Spader. It might be somebody else, but I think it's Ryan Spader, who does count all of the votes. I mean, he does that and tries to, like, project who's going to win. And the guy who has the most votes right now, now you have to have 75% of the votes to get into the Hall of Fame. And he's tracking at 85.9. Now, usually what you track at will come down a lot when the other votes are made. That's historically what's happened. Mm-hmm. So the guy at 85.9 right now is David Ortiz. Now, it's going to be close to 75% because you usually come down about 10% from what you're tracking at, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Well, if he gets in, this will be his first time on the ballot. And I got to give all credit and love to Don because he's predicted this for years. And I don't get it. Now, I'm not saying that David Ortiz doesn't deserve to get in. I don't. I'm not saying that. His numbers would tell you he deserves to get in. He's an unbelievable clutch player. Look at his numbers in the postseason, in the World Series, against the Yankees in those classic playoffs. Amazing. But in the baseline testing that the New York Times uncovered, he tested positive. Now, it was supposed to be anonymous, but it turned out not to be. Alex also tested positive in that baseline testing. But for some reason, he said it's not true, and then was backed up by Rob Manfred, who said, you know, that could have been a false positive. And everybody just buys it. And when people tell you it doesn't matter how a guy treats people or something like that, that's nonsense. It's complete poppycock because David Ortiz is immensely popular. He was pretty good with the media. And they're just ignoring the fact that he was on that list. And he just said, well, I didn't do anything. Well, let's look at the people that are not getting in. Barry Bonds is not getting in. Now, Barry Bonds admitted to taking the clear. And everybody assumes that Barry Bonds did roid. Never failed the test. Another one is Roger Clemens. They'll both get close, but this is the last year on the ballot. Not getting in. Never failed the test. Took it to court. Screamed to the top of the mountains that he didn't do anything wrong. He's not getting in. Might be one of the greatest, not might be, he's one of the greatest pitchers of baseball history. Not getting in. Sammy Sosa doesn't get more than 15% of the vote. He never failed the test. Now you can say, well, his numbers aren't Hall of Fame numbers. Well, really? Over 640 home runs, 660, whatever his number is. So he wasn't a complete player, but he was a pretty darn good ball player. Gary Sheffield admitted to taking the clear mistakenly once. His numbers would say Hall of Fame, not getting in. But David Ortiz, Don, and Peter, for some reason, any insinuation of any roid use is completely ignored.
It's not for some reason. There is a reason, and that's his immense, and I mean immense, popularity among the baseball community, among his peers, universally loved. Maybe the exception would be Yankee fans, but not Yankee players. All loved him. And that's the difference. With a few exceptions, Michael, the way our outrage, I call it selective outrage, comes based on the popularity of the player. If Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens were loved the way David Ortiz was loved, they'd be in. But those were two of the most hated players when they played. Pompous, arrogant, certainly not guys that you would say had glowing personalities. Ortiz, loved by everyone. And I knew that this would be the test case. I knew it because his numbers were good enough to go to the Hall of Fame. And then once Edgar Martinez got in, the DH wasn't going to hurt him. So the only thing that would hurt him were the PEDs. And I figured this is the guy whose popularity will break that trend. And then once he gets in, Michael, what are you going to do? How are you going to keep everybody else out? Are you going to admit, well, we let David Ortiz in because we love him and he's popular. And we hate Roger Clemens and Barry Bonds, and that's why they're not in.
Don,
that's not right.
There's at least three guys in the Hall of Fame, and I'm not going to name their names because I don't want to get sued. Everybody knows they're on roids. They're in the Hall of Fame. People ignored it because they didn't fail any tests. David Ortiz failed the baseline test and just said that's not true. It didn't happen. And Rob Manfred said it was probably a negative. I mean, amazing. Nobody said that about Alex. Now, Alex got suspended, right, because of anecdotal evidence, not empirical. He never failed the test other than that baseline test, which Rob Manfred has said, well, it could have been a false positive. And Alex did admit to taking roids when he was in Texas. So he's a different case. Manny Ramirez failed test. Rafael Palmeiro failed test. Andy Pettit admitted to taking roids or taking HGH. But Roger Clemens, nothing. He shouted from the rooftops. He's never had a positive test. Now, Brian McNamee said he did it. And you kind of like put the things together while Andy did it. And Andy and Roger, but why is Roger Clemens being looked at other than what Don's saying? Because he wasn't the easiest guy to deal with, although I had a great relationship with him. But David Ortiz is going to skate in.
Right, but you're answering your own question as you ask it.
But that's not the that should I know I am Peter.
But it is,
and it annoys me. It's not the that. But that's, you shouldn't that's, be voting that way.
But that's how. In what world are there things voted for where personality isn't like a primary factor? It's everything. It's literally elections are the same way.
And I believe, Peter, that if Andy Pettit's numbers warranted it, he'd be in the Hall of Fame too. Because everybody loved Andy.
No, because he admitted it. These guys, David Ortiz said no. It's like that. It wasn't me. It wasn't me. No, I didn't. It was wrong. Now, all of those players on that list should sue because that was supposed to be destroyed. It was supposed to be anonymous. The fact that it got out is disgraceful. But it did get out. And the people that are on there have a scarlet letter on them.
But David Ortiz does it. But that's the way the world goes, Michael. Why is baseball different than every other sport? Because the Hall of Fame is held to some certain, like a different standard in baseball than the other sports. You could be riddled with PEDs in every other sport, still find your way into the Hall of Fame and still be loved. But in baseball, because it's protected by one group of people, the sports writers, and they ultimately determine who's in or out. And now, if they really love a guy, they'll forgive. And if they hate a guy, they'll never forget. And that's just the way it works.
The guy that we were talking about is Ryan Thibodeau. And his Twitter handle is @NotMrTibbs. And as of January 17th, this is the way the ballots are trending. David Ortiz at 83.6%. Barry Bonds at 77.2%. Again, they fall from the public ballots, which is 161. So 43.6% of the ballots. Roger Clemens at 76, so they would get in right now, but they will drop when the other ballots come in. Scott Rolins at 69. Curt Schilling, his last year on the ballot, is 59.6. Then you have Todd Helton, Andrew Jones, Billy Wagner, Gary Sheffield, and A-Rod, all in the 40 percentile. I'm surprised A-Rod's that high. Because A-Rod was suspended a year for PED use.
Yeah, but things are starting to change now. I think you're getting new riders in that may not hold the PEDs to the same standard that the old school guys did. Right, Peter? There's probably a whole younger generation that doesn't care. Now, these guys might run out of road and not be able to be eligible for the ballot anymore, but we're going to get far enough removed from PEDs where there's going to be a whole group of reporters who are going to look back at PEDs much differently than we did when it was happening.
But it's just going to end up being such a weird group that's in the Hall of Fame. That to Michael's point, when their personality sort of fades from memory a bit, people are just going to go, wait a second, how is Barry Bonds not in, but David Ortiz is?
Now, there's one thing that everybody uses to say that all the roid guys should get in, which I think is the most ridiculous argument of all time. We'll talk about that when we get back right here on Yes and 98.7 ESPN.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN. The Michael K. Show.
Super Bowl is February 13th.
Yeah, my birthday.
I know.
First time ever.
It's going to be a big party, I'm hearing, right?
No.
Nothing?
Oh, we'll just have Nancy usually gets some matching shirts with me and the kids, and we sit and we watch the game. And I'm hoping I get to the point. I'm so envious of Michael that Charlie's getting into sports.
But he already likes metal.
Yeah, you might not get everything. I mean, listen, there's a chance the way things are going with Marco, he might just sit around watching Jackass movies all day.
The Michael K. Show.
We don't know.
On 98.7 ESPN.
Oh, it's been some show. Yeah. What a show. What a Tuesday show. You never know what you're going to get. That's why it's folly not to listen to all 4 hours. Tell your friends. Tell your family. And now with the Superbox Bonanza, you want to be part of that?
You hear that? You could hear in Michael's voice when he did that ooh hoo hoo. He sounded like Winnie the Pooh.
Really?
Oh, that's how joyful you sounded.
I am joyful today.
Winnie the Pooh was never joyous, though.
Yeah, it was always miserable.
Miserable. Hmm? Miserable SOB.
That's not true.
No, it's very true.
Winnie the Pooh. I don't know if Winnie was. His sidekick was.
You're talking about Rabbit?
No.
Eeyore.
Well, Eeyore.
Eeyore,
but
yeah.
No, but he was always, again, it was, bother. He couldn't get to the honey.
No, I mean, listen, Winnie the Pooh has times when he's frustrated and
most times.
And is kind of sad at the state of the world, but he also has times when he's really happy, like when he gets his honey and sticks his fat paws into it.
Do you know that Joe Buck once called me Eeyore?
Really?
Yeah, I was like doing some woe is me thing to him. He said, okay, yep. Eeyore.
You have Eeyore vibes.
Yeah, sure.
You're big and sort of like sulky and moo, 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 moo. Yeah, I can see Eeyore. Sure.
But I do have those moments of just utter joy.
Just seconds ago we heard.
Right. All right, so here's what bothers me of the argument that people make. Well, you got to put Bonds and Clement. Now, I don't have a vote. And where I would draw the line would be that after it became a rule in baseball and you just flew in the face of it and failed the test, I wouldn't put you in. I would have a tough time not voting for Bonds and Clemens. I would. But when they make the argument, well, how could you tell the story of baseball properly unless all of them are in the Hall of Fame? Really? So have you ever been to the Hall of Fame in Cooperstown? Everybody's in there. Pete Rose is in there. You don't have to have a plaque to have the Hall of Fame tell the story of baseball.
Right.
Roger Clemens has his uniform in there. Barry Bonds, a bat, whatever the case may be. Pete Rose, So, I mean, it's such a stupid, dumb, weak argument. It's a museum. In order to tell the story properly, those guys have to – they are in. They are in. It's not like they've been whitewashed out of the story of baseball. They're in the hall. They're just not in the room with the plaques. That's a different room. That's an exalted room. That's heaven. So they're in purgatory, but they're there. So that's a dumb argument. Either you say, okay, the steroid guys deserve to be in or not. Don't tell me, well, you've got to properly tell the story of baseball, so they have to be in. Nonsense. They don't have to be enshrined.
But this is, again, it's the selective outrage that we decided we are going to punish these players and not allow them into the Hall of Fame. Just, and really arbitrarily so, because most of these players took steroids when there was no rule against it in baseball. Now,
but it was
frowned
illegal.
Down upon.
It was illegal in the world, though. You needed a prescription.
I understand. It was illegal in the world, but there's nothing written down that says if you test positive for PEDs, you're banned from the Hall of Fame. Now, there was for Pete Rose gambling as far as like being banned from baseball, but there was no rule that says he couldn't be put into the Hall of Fame. That was just decided upon. The PEDs were just decided upon. So if something's just decided upon, it can be very easily changed. And that's why the Ortiz thing is interesting, because they just decided this guy doesn't deserve the punishment that the other guys do. So it just shows you how arbitrary it is and how biased it is. And in the other sports, why is baseball held to a different standard than the other sports? Because baseball's the one that has their writers select who goes to the Hall of Fame. And that select few, dictated how the rest of the world's got to feel about it. But meanwhile, you could be a hockey player, a basketball player, or a football player, have the same life and end up in the Hall of Fame and never even have it be brought up. Heck, you be a cheater in other sports. It'll be brought up, but it's not going to stop Tom Brady from getting into the Hall of Fame, Bill Belichick from getting into the Hall of Fame.
Heck, and there are guys in football that get caught with roids, which are also illegal. It's like nothing. Not a big deal.
And you know, and Gaylord Perry's in the Hall of Fame, and he cheated.
And how many guys took amphetamines, which are performance enhancers? We forget about that. I mean, there's stories that people say, oh, it used to be like M&M's in the middle of the room. Just grab a – really?
My problem with the amphetamines argument is, like you just said, there was a bowl right in the middle of the room, and they just took them. It was generally accepted as something that you could do. Meanwhile, even before it was a rule in baseball, Michael, nobody was injecting themselves in front of everybody else. They were doing it in closets and showers behind closed doors because it was like a seedy, ugly thing that you didn't want anybody to know that you were doing. The amphetamines were readily available to everyone, supplied by the team. So I do see the difference between the two, but you could throw it in there. We've just arbitrarily decided that amphetamines are okay, but PEDs aren't. That a spitball's okay, but amphetamines aren't. You know, and who are these gods to allow that to happen? And you're starting to see a groundswell of people who don't care anymore. So when does baseball step in and just say, listen, are we really helping ourselves that we're the one sport that's trying to be holier than thou?
Well, another thing that's going to be a problem, too, and we'll talk more about this next week when the vote becomes official, but if Ortiz doesn't get in, no one's getting in. You're going to kill that town. That town needs the induction weekend. No one's going to get in. Bonds and Clemens are not getting in. Schilling's not getting in. And if Ortiz just misses it like 74.5, no one is getting into the Hall of Fame. You're going to kill the town of Cooperstown.
And meanwhile, if Ortiz does get in, with how close Boston is to Cooperstown, it'll be a mob scene.
Right. All right, let's shift to football. Yesterday, the Rams really embarrassed the Arizona Cardinals. Embarrassed them. It's like the Arizona Cardinals didn't even belong on the field. And sometimes when you look at bets and afterward the way they turn out, just look at the way the Arizona Cardinals have finished the last three seasons under Kingsbury. They collapse. They just collapse. They didn't belong on the same field as the Rams. And Kyler Murray, you know, they have to make a decision. We talk about Daniel Jones and the like. They got to make a decision on this guy. Are you going to give this guy a big money contract the way he played in a big game? Now, it's unfair to just jump him because if you look at the history of rookie quarterbacks in the playoffs, they don't do well. There's never been a rookie quarterback to take his team to the Super Bowl, let alone win one. They haven't even taken him there. So they usually do poorly. But Don and Peter, That was a different level of poor yesterday. Well, he was overwhelmed.
Well, Hopkins out was a problem too. So they weren't 100% healthy. But hey, that's kind of the rite of passage, right? This is how you learn and get better.
Didn't bother Tom Brady that Godwin and Antonio Brown were out.
Well, that's Tom Brady.
I get it, but I mean, you got to step up.
He's a third-year quarterback playing in his first postseason game. Now, I don't think they're winning the game with Hopkins in, but certainly it didn't help that his best receiver isn't in there. But this is a rite of passage. You go, all right, you get your pass, all right? Your first playoff game, you look awful on the road. Now, next year, let's see what you do. And if this continues to be a theme, well, then maybe you got to go in a different direction. But I'm not going to judge a third-year player playing in his first playoff game against a really good defense and say, "Oh, they got the wrong guy." That's unfair.
Let's have some real conversation here, guys. Now that we are officially at the end of the wild card weekend,
super wild card.
Super it was. Super terrible. The Raiders were a legit playoff team, and they played a legit game against the Bengals and came up short. After that, when you look on paper, Patriots had no business being there. They were completely manhandled and embarrassed. They were not a playoff team. The Eagles were not a playoff team. They were an utter joke. No business playing against Tampa Bay. The Cowboys are an interesting story, of course, because we know they had the talent to be there, but they're so poorly coached that they had no business being there. Pittsburgh, we all knew, wasn't a playoff team going in, and they got in literally in a bizarre, freakish way. They had no business being there. And then the Cardinals. For as great as their record was this season, and yes, they were missing Hopkins, they were a joke last night. This was a horrible playoff weekend. Like, you literally, half the teams who played had no business competing in the playoffs. It was really bad. I don't remember. I know that you get some of these bad matchups occasionally wild card weekend. Do you remember an entire NFL playoff weekend this bad?
Well, this is the second year that you have the extra teams in the playoffs, and all of those extra teams have not done well. They have not represented at all.
No.
And if people say, well, the NFL should reconsider, really? They're going to reconsider all the hundreds of millions of dollars they get for those extra playoff games? And by the way, they all rated very well.
Of course they did.
Because it's the NFL, and they print money, and that's why we're never going to go back. But that doesn't mean we can't criticize and say, are these legit playoff teams? You know, because it's one thing in the NBA and the NHL, okay, the 8 seed gets beat by the 1 seed. Oh, it's a different story. You kind of accept it, but it's one game. And listen, we do a great job at this company. I think the broadcast was phenomenal. I think I'd rather go 3 Saturday, 3 Sunday.
You said that.
Because I don't know. Listen, I'm obviously biased because the game was not great. If that game had gone to triple overtime, I probably would have a different feel for it. But
what would it make a difference if it was on Saturday? Or it doesn't make a difference.
Because then you watch right a football game for an extra day. You know, you'd have other games. To have a standalone game, Michael, when it's not good, then it just really leaves a bad taste in your mouth. I think that's the difference. If that was the 1 o'clock game on Saturday, hey, I got two more. Let's move on. You know, you had the stinker with the Eagles and the Tampa. All right, well, I got a game that night. Now that game wasn't great either, because you're not going to be able to get them all be gold. But to have the standalone game, that kind of felt like when we were growing up with the Super Bowls. It's like, oh, this isn't great, you know. And it was circumstances. Maybe I'm just trying to be traditional, but give me 3 on Saturday, give me 3 on Sunday.
Yeah, I'm with you. Last night, maybe it was just the fact that the game was so bad, but yeah, I wanted and I did. I went back and watched wrestling.
I don't want to make this. I don't get what you guys are saying. I mean, if the game was bad, it'd be bad on Saturday or Sunday.
I understand, but it's almost like the bad stood out more because it had this Monday night feel.
Well, I mean, but this was, I looked at this match and said I thought it was going to be a really fun game. I thought it was going to be a great game.
Again, I don't have a leg to stand on. Like Steve Young said, you can't prove it. I can't prove it because the game was a dud. It really was. There was never a moment where you thought that the Cardinals were going to make this a competitive game. But here's where it's different when it ends up being a stinker. If that game's at 1 o'clock, right, you wake up, you turn the game on at 1 o'clock, all right, it's a bad game. You've got two more. And then at the end of the day, you have three games to review. And then you get to Sunday, and then you got three more games. When we get to Monday, you're kind of recapping the game. All right, the Rams, if that was the 1 o'clock game on Saturday, Rams-Cardinals would be just lost in the shuffle. But when it's the standalone Monday night game, it's all anybody's talking about all day because it's a playoff game on a Monday. So you're hyped up for it all day, and you watch the pregame, and then you sit there, and it's like a stinker, and you've got nothing else to go to. There's no other game. And then you wake up the next day, and the only thing you're analyzing, it's hard to lump it in with the other ones because it was a full day removed, 2 days removed from Saturday. So you know what I'm saying, Peter? As a standalone hype game, when it stinks, it's a disaster. Where if, yeah, it's 1 o'clock, it's just another game that stunk.
I'm with you, Don. And also, Michael, I know, listen, I shouldn't say things like this about something that's so important to our company, but this is what makes our show special. Even though some people just consider us shills, we're actually quite critical at times. Man, the Mannings and the Rock was a rough watch.
You know what? This was one of the first times that I was more engaged in the regular game. You know, Leaves and the guys. So I went
pretty
back
good to
and
be
forth.
Your boy Leaves right about now.
But I will tell you this: the one thing that I would say about the Manning cast, there are times that it dragged. They never seemed like they worked out the fact that they talked over each other all the time. There was a little awkwardness in it. There really was.
No, it was very awkward. There was one very funny part when, of course, Peyton wasn't ready and said the S word, and then Eli's response was amazing. That was great. But in general, their whole back and forth with The Rock, I don't know if it was delay or if maybe The Rock was so excited to be there.
The Rock was also drinking a full bottle of tequila.
Well, that's what The Rock does.
Right.
But he wasn't drunk. He was almost too prepared. Like, The Rock was really excited and he was promoting it all day and, like, ready for a real interview. And it just felt... You know, he would, like, try to ask them questions about football. It never got to a place, and this is something for you to think about as you get ready for K-Rod. You when you're not in the same room, you never know how it's going to play.
Well, yeah, I don't want to, like, hang on the rim. For 2 years, we have not been in the same room. We don't step on each other.
But, by the way, though, your delay when you guys have guests will be much worse than our delay right now. We have almost no delay on Comrex. The technology we use basically creates almost no delay. But when you're running through a Skype or a StreamYard or whatever it is, through Bristol, there's probably 2 to 3 seconds delay. I mean, you guys remember what happened Yankee game when I tried to say things during the Yankee game.
But again, for 2 years, you know, we've had O'Neal in Studio 21. We've never had delay like that. He's not working off of Comrex.
Okay. Well, listen, I'm just saying be mindful, okay?
No, I am mindful because, I mean, you want to learn because this was such a phenomenon with the two of them. You want to learn and make it even better. But, you know, it's going to be interesting.
I also wish they just didn't have to follow. I understand the way the commercial thing works. They have to. I just wish they didn't have to so strictly follow the commercial schedule.
Right. Right.
They get awkwardly jammed in these spots where they're like, oh, we're going to break, and they just get quiet and go to break. And I wish
I couldn't agree with you more. It should be a standalone.
Like, I can't tell you. Yesterday, every time the conversation started to move the right direction with The Rock, they'd go, we got to take a break. And then it's this awkward fade into the break. It's just – and I will say this. This is another reason your broadcast is going to be just the highest level. God bless Eli and Peyton. Don, neither of them's a driver. Neither, you know, Peyton plays the driver, but he's not Michael Kay. It's a different sort of operation to try to do the ins and outs of running a show.
But over time, I think it probably could get better. And it was probably an experiment to start. Nobody knew exactly what was going to happen with it. It ended up being something that
paid
way more attention to than I think they thought. So now, it'll get better.
I don't know if you guys felt like this. I even while the game was not competitive, I thought it was exhilarating to see the talent that the Rams had on the field. And then I lost all taste for the broadcast or for the game when Buda Baker got hurt. I mean, that was so frightening. And he's fine.
Yeah, he tweeted.
He was on
today.
A plane to Phoenix today.
Yeah.
But when I mean that hit was just so it tells you what football's all about. And then right away that hit, everybody on Twitter prayers out. That's football, man. It's awful. Yeah, prayers are out, but you got to expect it. It's going to happen. That's football. And there was no way that Akers could have avoided him. They both ducked their head down, and Baker got the worst of it. But it was so brutal in his viciousness. I lost my appetite. I don't know if you guys felt the same way. I wonder if I'll tell you, the game wasn't as exciting after that. I don't think the players are on the same level.
I don't know how players do it. I had asked, Dave about it when there was a really scary incident during a Ranger game a few weeks ago, when a player was taken off on a stretcher. Like, how you got the player that makes the hit or is involved in the hit that's got to, like, live with it. But then, like, the players, like, you see them kneeling down. You just wonder, how do you get back to football? There's got to be a period of time where they're just going through the motions, right? Where you just you're so taken out of it. You don't know how he is. It could happen to you. So it's got to take a little while before you get your bearings back.
Listen, I've gotten used to it to some degree, which is sad. Like, I got to admit, sometimes I'm actually surprised by how affected people are by it, because it happens every three games that I watch. I mean, Don, honestly, how many games do you go before you see someone knocked completely unconscious mid-play? Yeah. It happened on Monday Night Football. Everyone was, or was it Sunday or Monday night a month ago, where that receiver's helmet just hit the ground and everyone was shocked again. That's what this game is. People get knocked unconscious. Even in this best version of the game, where you're not supposed to hit helmet to helmet, though that play yesterday was helmet to helmet.
Well, it was initiated by the offense. The only way you stop it, Peter, is if you turn into flag football. That's the only way. I mean, football is, in essence, a violent sport.
Correct. It's just, even if you protect everything against it, every few games. Guys, if we were to look right now, someone went completely limp and unconscious. I won't say in every game that was played this year. I mean, every weekend it happened. There's no way there was a week in the NFL where that didn't happen once. It's part of the game. And I'm not saying that's okay or right, but it is certainly what we're signing up for.
All right, so the divisional playoffs are now set. You have the Titans in Tennessee against the Bengals. Titans 3.5-point favorites. You have the Packers in Green Bay. These are the Saturday games against the 49ers. The Packers 5.5 at this point. The Sunday games, the Buccaneers 3-point favorites over the Rams in Tampa Bay, in Tampa. And then Kansas City hosts the Bills, 2.5-point favorite, the Chiefs are. And I got to tell you, every single one of those games are games that I can't wait to see. Every one.
Well,
everyone is so intriguing. It's just great.
I'm not saying that you're not going to see blowouts, but to Peter's point, there are teams that don't belong. And now you get to the divisional round, and these are all legit playoff teams, right? What they were able to overcome, even San Francisco, they won in Dallas. So if you had any questions about them, forget it. They won a playoff game. They were hot down the stretch. Rams, there were certainly questions about Stafford never winning a playoff game. Well, he won one going away. And they've had a history. There's a team that was recently in a Super Bowl. Now, those are really good teams. They deserve to be where they are.
The games in Super Wildcard Weekend with such blowouts, the only thing that saved Vegas was that the Cowboys lost.
Mm-hmm.
Because Cowboys have so many people that bet them. Cowboy Nation, Cowboy fans are, America's team. And that saved Vegas because everything pretty much played according to the numbers of that's why it's mind-boggling that Peter didn't get one game right.
And that's why, you get these people that think all these conspiracy theories, like, oh, the NFL wants these games to be competitive, wants the nationally televised games to be competitive. You think the NFL wanted this? If they had control, this would not be the net result. Their nationally televised game last night, the nationally televised game on Sunday.
The
nationally
beauty
televised
of the NFL,
game on
though,
Saturday, not nationally, the ones in the prime time window were all blowouts.
But the beauty of the NFL is you don't need the game to be competitive. You need to have the game competitive within the spread. But now, the Patriots and the Bills, that was not competitive. The Buccaneers and the Eagles, you stuck around. One more touchdown and a two-point conversion,
true,
and the Eagles covered.
But
then the 49ers and the Cowboys, right till the end. Steelers and the Chiefs, that was not competitive even with the line. And the Cardinals and the Rams, not competitive even with the line.
That's what I'm saying. The prime time, the three prime time windows, the game and the spread was never in doubt. So if the NFL does pull strings, that would not happen. Right? That you would have all three prime time games be stinkers. Did even gamble? I had the Cardinals at 4.5, Michael. That was never going to happen.
Right.
It was never going to happen. It was never going to happen with a Steeler game. And it was never, ever going to happen in the Bills-Patriots game. Those are off the table early.
Let's take a brief time out. We'll take some phone calls. 1-800-919-3776. Big 5 o'clock hour here on the K-Show on this Tuesday. We'll be back on Yes and on 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Hey, buddy, hey.
Catch the show on demand wherever you want. Just subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts.
A lot of people have been waiting on hold. They want to talk. So sure. Let's talk with them. Let's do that. What do you say?
Yeah, I think we should.
Let's go to Joe in New Jersey. JoJo, what's up?
Gentlemen, good afternoon. How's everybody?
Everybody's good. How about you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you.
Good.
Two quick things, gentlemen. That playoff game last night had so much a similarity to the Super Bowl years ago, Seattle, Denver, when Seattle went up 2-0 on the safety and you knew the game was over.
Yeah.
If you remember that game.
Yeah, absolutely.
And secondly and lastly, the debacle, the end of the Dallas Cowboys San Francisco 49er game, I had no issue with the play call, the quarterback draw. I thought the execution was questionable. And if you notice, that linesman who eventually spotted the ball came from at least 15 yards away. That's absolutely ridiculous.
Now, the play call was ridiculous.
Well, hold on, but real quick. Let's humor this for a second.
All right.
What was that 60-year-old ref supposed to do? Run the same speed as the athletes on the field? What do you want him to do?
And also, so, he was blocked from getting to the ball. He was blocked from getting to the ball, Joe. The Cowboys were lined up, and he had a maneuver through them. And the job
but
that
he ran from about 15 yards from up the field.
Well, but because the play that's where he was, because that's right. Where the play started. And also to say it was a perfect call, everybody in the NFL is saying the line of demarcation is 17 seconds to do that. He ran it with 14. Doesn't make sense. You're losing 3 seconds.
I'm curious, what's the benefit of even running the play? Why would you cut your opportunities in half? Is he still there?
No.
He hung up because there's no answer. It was a dumb call. It was executed poorly. Stop with the officials already. These Cowboy fans, grow up. What do you think? He went and had a cup of coffee? He had to run from wherever he was stationed to be. And Prescott should know, I've got to get it to the official. He should know to slide way before the 20-yard line to give himself more time. It was a poor play and it was poorly executed, period. End of sentence. Do not get involved with the officials. You were not jobbed. The Cowboys blew that game.
And you have to know when you can't say, I like the play call, but I don't like the fact that the ref had to catch up to the ball. That's part of what the play call is.
That's why you need 17 seconds.
That's why you need the time, because the ref has to get there. So you can't say you liked it, but you didn't like that the ref wasn't there, because that the ref could only do what they can do.
And you didn't execute it the right way, because you're supposed to hand the ball to him.
Right.
He had to fight through an offensive line to get to the ball.
But to Peter's point is that you slide earlier. If he slides at the 27, say, then everything goes down exactly the same way it went down. They've got a second or two to run a play. But I'd love to know that caller's logic of the quarterback sneak. You've now cut your opportunities in half. From the 40, you'd get two cracks. Now you just got one.
I'm curious, because Cowboy fans see things through a different prism. What did your brother think?
No, he thought it was the most acidine play he's ever seen. I mean, the first thing he did was call me. He's like, who calls a quarterback sneak in that situation?
I just keep thinking about it. 14 seconds from the 40.
Right.
McCarthy used a defense. They were playing the sidelines. Were they? Because all I saw you guys do was catch ball after ball on the sideline. Right? It worked the whole drive. They were able to move the ball in ridiculous fashion. Don, on the next play, if you wanted to, you could have run a 4-second out, potentially gotten 15 yards, and taken almost no time off the clock. If that fails, you try it once, you get nothing, you throw it out of bounds with 10 seconds left. Don, right. You still might have two cracks after that.
Let's dissect this a little further, okay? What is he worried about the sidelines? Is he telling us that Dak can't reach the end zone from the 40? Like, why do you feel like you got to get closer? Why are you sacrificing a play to get closer? You don't think Dak Prescott, when he drops back to pass, he's going to be, what, like the 47? Say it's the 50. He can't throw a ball 50 yards? Get out of the league. Look, why is he so concerned about, why did he feel like he had to get closer?
Well, here's the logic I would use. Because I could, even though statistically this doesn't bear out, but this is what I would think. We didn't want him throwing a Hail Mary. We didn't want a 50-yard Hail Mary. We wanted a 25-yard shot at the end zone.
Right.
And I get that. But you could have done that by throwing an out with 14 seconds left, not sneaking the ball.
But even Steve Young said, all right, you can argue that. But Steve even said he would still take the two plays, and here's why. All right, yes, it's a Hail Mary. But, Peter, it doesn't even have to be completed. There could be a pass interference. There could be a defensive hold. There's plenty of things that can happen that can give you another opportunity, especially a pass interference that gets the ball at the one-yard line. All right, yeah, it's obvious. Forget about the statistics. I would think it's easier to throw a 20-yard touchdown pass than a 40-yard touchdown pass, obviously. But if
statistically,
I get two opportunities as opposed to one, I still think two from the 40 gives me a better chance than one from the 20. And if it was done properly, it'd be one from the 25. So you were willing to sacrifice an entire play, Peter, to get 15 extra yards? Because obviously sliding at the 23 wasn't enough. They ran out of time.
And also, listen, we can talk about this till we're blue in the face, and I'd love to, because A, I found it fascinating, and B, it's the Cowboys losing. But when you look at the box score, what tells the story of the game is Ezekiel Elliott, 12 carries, 31 yards. Amari Cooper was good, and Cedric Wilson was CeeDee Lamb, one catch. They just weren't good all day long.
But what good's a running game if you're behind?
But that's, you know what? I got to tell you this. I am so sick of the behind, you can't run the ball nonsense. These days, and we've talked about this, what was this? Hold on. It was 10-0 after the first quarter?
Yeah.
You have to get away from the run?
No, you're right.
Like, they now in this league get away from the run. You could be down 14-0 to me in the third quarter and still run the ball if you have Ezekiel Elliott. But they waited so long, you can't wait and try to establish the run at the end of the game. I just don't understand why they bail so quickly, because if you stick with Zeke, A, eventually at some point he's going to get through Ezekiel Elliott, and B, you're giving yourself the opportunity to run play action. They drop back. They had Dak dropping back all day, and he never had a look at anything.
Peter, I'll tell you what, though. Elliott's not the same. He's not the same player.
I mean, listen, he is not. He's not Zeke of 2 years ago.
No way.
But he rushed for 1,000 yards this season.
Yeah, okay, that's in 17 games, so it's not like, you know, when they used to do it in 12, so yeah. it's still something, but he's not the same running back. He's just not. I mean, you compare him to Akers yesterday. Akers was amazing. Guy had an Achilles injury.
Yeah, he was very good
yesterday. And how about McKinnon with the Kansas City Chiefs? That guy was amazing.
Isn't it wild, these names that pop up at one? Every day, Don's proven more right. Every single day. If we were to go through the running backs that impressed us the most this year, they're almost all names we wouldn't have ever thought about.
Absolutely.
In our life.
Now, Paul Hembekides, who works on Greeny's show on radio and also on Get Up, he broke this down. The Hail Mary hit rate. So from 40 to 50 yards, it's 11%. Under 40 yards, it's 11%. So those extra 10 or 15 yards, Paul said, that the Cowboys wanted so badly were obviously negligible. They didn't mean anything. It's 11% to hit that. Now, I'm wondering if what Don's saying, if there's a shred of truth to that. Maybe they don't think he can throw it. But I've never heard any questions about Dak's arm.
Yeah.
Go to Kevin in the Bronx. Kevin.
Michael, Don, and Peter, how you doing, guys?
Good. How are you?
I'm very good. Very good, thank you. I just wanted to add to what Peter was talking about the Cowboys being poorly coached, and I'm just listening to you guys speak. And, as far as I'm concerned, I think the Cowboys have deeper problems here. Number one, the team that I saw was very undisciplined, and the penalties were a major problem. And those penalties have been a major issue for this team all season, and it came back really hurt them. So with that said, what's going to happen with the head coach? I don't like to see anyone lose their job because Mike McCarthy has a family to take care of. And I'm going to also give him the benefit of the doubt here as well, that he talks to his team about the penalties. Mike McCarthy won a Super Bowl. He understands that you cannot beat yourself. You cannot constantly take one step forward and two steps backwards. So I'm going to give him the benefit of a doubt that he talks to his team constantly about the penalties. But here's the problem. The problem,
not, Kevin, they're the not court. Listening.
They're not listening.
Well, right. See, I think who was it that we had on? I think it was Steve Young who said those players only – they answer to Jerry Jones. I mean, when you have an overwhelmingly powerful owner like that who is the GM, that's who they're playing to. They're not playing to the coach. I mean, you need a big-time coach like a Jimmy Johnson or Bill Parcells to cut through that nonsense. And it's hard to. Now, Jerry Jones has a weekly spot on a radio show in Dallas. And I got this from our good friend Incarcerated Bob. He canceled his appearance today. The last time he did that, he fired the coach. Now, Stephen Jones, the executive vice president of the team, Jerry's son, had his weekly spot. Imagine that.
Yeah.
It shows you how different it is. The two owners, they have weekly spots. And he said he's very confident that McCarthy's going to keep his job. I think a lot of it depends on if Kellen Moore gets an offer. They want to keep him. But how much did Kellen Moore have to do with that call, Don?
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I think he'd have something to do with it. Hey, listen, Mike McCarthy, I think, has proven. I know he's got a Super Bowl on his ledger, and we can't take that away from him. But he's left a lot to be desired in Dallas. You go back to Jason Garrett before him, Wade Phillips, you know, a good coach, but not a championship coach. I mean, you got to go back to Bill Parcells the last time they had, you know, a big-time head coach in Dallas. And a lot of it's because they can't work with Jerry because Jerry is the boss. He's collected very good talent there, but there's something missing. And the thing that's missing is that they're not well-coached. They're not a disciplined team. And in this league, talent matters, but not as much in the other sports. Talent cannot overcome poor coaching, lack of discipline, lack of awareness, and that's what you saw it in that game. Defensive hold in that situation by Gregory. You can't have that happen. And that's a veteran player. It's not a bunch of kids making these mistakes, guys. Dak, they invested a lot of money in him. Change the play. Slide earlier. All right, so the call's bad, right? The coaching's bad. But Dak's got to know better. He's not a kid. That wasn't Kyler Murray out there and playing his first playoff game. Slide earlier. Have some awareness. You shouldn't put yourself in a situation, guys, where you're down to a split second with a referee spot determining whether you get another shot or not. That's on you.
And Dak couldn't say to Mike McCarthy, I mean, to Michael's point, Mike McCarthy's not Bill Belichick. Dak can't say, no, we're not running this play. I'm taking a shot here.
All right. But
not
even,
doing this.
All right, fine. You don't do that. You disagree with the coach, but hey, he's the coach. All right, I'll run the play. But be aware of the time, where the official is, even the rule. Like, we're killing the official. Where's the official? He handed it to his center. So did he even know he had to get it to the official? That was completely botched by, first of all, the play should have never been called, guys. But once it's called, you have to have be aware of where I slide, constantly understanding the time. Do not leave it in, as you put, an elderly gentleman official that's got a quarter of the talent these guys do and have it all in his hands that he's going to be able to sprint the 15 yards, place the ball down perfectly. If everything went perfectly, they still might not have been able to get the playoff.
Also, everyone is coming after me and saying, look at this picture. The 49ers had the sidelines covered. I'm not saying they didn't run a play for that. What I'm saying is, you think that was the only play where they were watching for the sidelines? They weren't watching for the sidelines on the previous four plays?
But
were they
probably
up the
weren't.
Field?
Or they probably weren't because they gave up 40 yards in 18 seconds. So I'm sure they finally got the clue. We've got to take away the sidelines. But why do you need the sidelines?
But
you
also,
that's a great point.
They didn't care about the 40 yards they gave up. They just had to keep them out of the end zone. A field goal wouldn't have done anything. Then they tightened their defense. That's all. We'll come back. We'll talk more about this. More phone calls. Kayla Greco, Rosenberg, and you on Yes at 98.7 ESPN.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoon starting at 3 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Hey, Alexa, play 98.7 ESPN.